Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm Scott Greenberg.
As winter descends upon Park City, we welcome the snow, of course, and the great skiing, but not so much flipping on the switch to our roof heat tape. It's a necessary evil for most of us to prevent ice dams that can destroy a roof. We love the snowy winters, but we don't love the energy bills that come with using heat cables.
If only there was some smart technology to minimize the excess energy bills that come from using heat cables, turning it off and on only when the roof needs it. Well, indeed, that technology exists, and the company based right here in Park City is called PowderWatts.
You may have heard of it, but you don't know how it works. Well, stay tuned. Our guests are the co-founders of PowderWatts, Tom Clardy and Kai Kuck. Tom and Kai, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good morning.
Kai, you're the chief engineer, and so you come from an engineering background. How did you get involved with PowderWatts?
Oh, one day I had my heat cables installed, and I noticed about a year later my heat bill or my electricity bill went from $80 a month in the winter to $320 a month in winter. And I had forgotten about the heat cable. I called the power company and said, "Look, you guys made a mistake. Something's wrong." And it turns out they didn't make a mistake. I had heat cables on, they reminded me. And so my house had become four houses from an electrical footprint point of view. And so I was chatting with Tom about it. And so then we started having the ideas of, well, what if we have a smarter way of controlling those?
Aha. And I understand that some people have asked their electricians to install a thermostat, with this idea in mind. Maybe they're not engineers, so they just say to their electrician, "Can't you do something about this?" But that's where you guys came in. Tom, tell us about your background.
Oh, great. Thanks. I'm also in, science and technology and technology development. And Kai and I kind of, when we first met each other years ago, we became fast friends because we both liked that, this is pretty good for this audience, right? The science show. We both love all the art of the possible and thinking about and dreaming about. But we also both know it is a long road from a great idea to figuring out if it really is a great idea to actually being able to help, whoever it is you're trying to help in the marketplace. And so both Kai and I actually have a tech transfer background, doing these sort of things. And both he and I have spent time in industry and in academics together. So it was a great fit. And I actually, Kai, I'm not sure if you remember this, but I remember sitting around a neighbor's campfire and saying, "You know what? We really should see if we can take this to market." And everybody there, we're all Pine Brook and Jeremy Ranch kind of folks and saying, "Yes, please do." And that was sort of the biggest shot of encouragement we could get. So we did.
Well, I personally am glad you did because in the way back days, I remember I actually installed, and this is before Ring. I mean, this is back when we actually had to have these VCR cameras. I don't know if you know what I'm referring to. They were like the old security cameras they would use at businesses. And I had them actually posted around the house, and everybody in the neighborhood thought I was crazy. They're like, "Well, what are you doing that for?" And I said, "Well, I want to monitor what's going on in both the driveway and my roof for snow." Because we were absentee owners at that point. The heat cable was driving us nuts because just like Kai, we were getting these bills and saying, "Oh my gosh, how in the world can this be sustainable?" So, we thought we were so clever. We installed a remote switch, which of course burned out immediately and kept the heat cables on full time. So, how does your technology circumvent the knuckleheadness that I was doing back, say, 10 years ago?
Well, I think, one of the first things we set about was looking for something commercial off the shelf. Because Kai and I thought, if only we can assemble some symphony of technologies, wouldn't that be great? We can go to market quickly. But what we found was in the marketplace didn't exist a high amperage switch that had the kind of data logging and telemetry that we'd know that we would need. So, for instance, how many amps are being drawn real time? And so kind of you think about it, hopefully the science people like this, right? But if you think about amp draw, that's sort of your speedometer, right? How fast are you going? How much are you consuming? And then amp hours or watt hours being kind of your odometer. So we wanted to log both of those for a couple of reasons. So in order to, we had to build our own switch, which kind of comes back to what it is you were talking about, Scott. We couldn't find anything commercial off the shelf that had the combination of high amperage, real utility grade monitoring of this energy consumption, and then full telemetry. So we could alert homeowners and business owners to say, Hey, there's a problem with your cables, not just with our computer vision, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, but also just, let's say your heat cables are supposed to be drawing, or their baseline draw is maybe 3 or 4 or 5 amps, something like this. Or if it's a big circuit, it might be 6 or 7. If it falls outside of a bounding box, right? Like if it suddenly spikes or it suddenly goes too low, or even if it drifts low over the years, we're able to see that and monitor and alert on that. So, Scott, we wished we could have done the same thing you did, but we found, look, all these just don't have the amperage to pass, and also the voltage range, right? Everything from 120 all the way up to 277.
Well, mine was
Yeah.
actually a double whammy because not only was the heat cable drawing, but so were the security cameras.
Yes.
Didn't
Frankly, that's another point, right? I thought initially, well, we'll just get some security cameras and put them on the roof. It turns out the conditions are so harsh, we had to make our own camera. It sounds simple, but it's actually not trivial at all because the conditions are so harsh up on the roof with the ice and the snow, and in the summer, the hot sun and the UV radiation.
On that line, what about the actual age of the heat cable itself? Does that affect efficiency? My heat cables were probably 10, 12, 15 years old.
Yeah, part of the self-regulating heat cables, it's polymer based, and over time, of course, they're black, right? And so they degrade over time. They last for many, many years before they become really dangerous, but their efficiency goes down absolutely. And by the way, nobody monitors them, right? Unless you have a camera on the roof.
Right. In addition to this technology, as Kai mentioned, you have a smart camera. So is that camera monitoring the amount of snow on the roof?
That's probably the most exciting science type question is, how do you actually determine when these things should be on and when they should be off, and are they working correctly? And our company motto is, with vision, we know. So we said, hey, why don't we use computer vision? I like to say it's just like the Tesla computer vision that drives your car down the road, but much, much more simple, because we're not scooting down the road at 70 miles an hour trying to dodge other cars and find the right exit ramp. We're just staring at the roof all day long. It was both simple to figure this out, but also extremely complex. And since it's a science show, I'll get into the little geeky details. When we started this, we were the world of computer vision and AI in general was, just sort of starting to sprout in a significant way. And there was, industrial uses of computer vision where, like say, for instance, a machine line where a part comes off, and there's good computer vision. It's very reliable to look at the exact same scenario every single time and find defects. But what there wasn't for the static computer vision was, look, like here's a million different roofs or 20 million different roofs. And by the way, there's several heat cable circuits on some of them. So maybe 40, 60 million different environments. And the weather's always changing and the lighting's always changing. And sometimes you're completely covered in snow or pine needles or leaves. And the challenge is, we want you to say, tell us, look, if I was a person sitting on the roof, digging an inspection pit down through the snow, could these things be placed in a standby mode? Should they be placed in a standby mode, which, by the way, extends the life of the heat cable and also saves a tremendous amount of energy for people? Or the alternative, hey, look, there's new snow and ice forming. We better turn on. So what we did was we set about writing our own computer vision algorithm. We're now in our third generation. We've learned a lot. And what we found, interestingly, was that there was the worldwide existing data set on cars and traffic lights and people, or even sweaters and cats. I like to say cats because everybody likes internet cats. And on all these household objects it was enormous, with many, many, many trillions of images. But the worldwide existing data set of rooftop heat cables was exactly zero. So through millions and millions of image acquisition over time and training and even human training, like looking at these cables and labeling them for many years, we've gotten to the point now where, we're happy to say that the computer vision takes care of it all for us.
Are you now your own data set?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's growing.
Very quickly. And it's interesting because there's asphalt shingle roofs and there's tile roofs and there's metal roofs and there's metal roofs with snow fencing, which the Park City crowd probably knows what that is. There's the little bars that kind of go across your roof to prevent sliding, and there's all sorts of different roofs. And so it was an adventure to train and to write this code. We definitely came into the industry at the right time because a couple things had to come together: computer vision, Internet of Things, be able to do the switching and the turning on. And Scott, I think you had mentioned that the doorbells. Well, some of the first engineers we hired actually were out of the deal when Amazon acquired Ring, and they had I think they stayed on. They had a contract to stay on for 2 years, and then they were free agents. And so we picked them up kind of right around then to help with our developing the rooftop monitor, which is incredibly harsh because you think, well, I'll just stick a camera up there. But the fact that all of these roofs in Park City get actually frozen in a block of ice at one point in time, it's not just fluffy, beautiful powder, it's hard ice. And I can't think of any other cameras that survive that, honestly. Even like deep sea cameras, they have to be waterproof, but they don't have to be ice proof. And of course, ice cracks all rocks. And so it's an interesting challenge and engineering challenge.
Staying in the science lane for just a moment. So your system is sometimes described as a winter virtual power plant. Kai, what exactly does that mean?
Well, if you think about it, we're controlling a lot of wattage. Every house, maybe on average, has 2,000 or 3,000 watts, and we can turn them on and off. If the power plant is in a situation where they have a lot of peak power usage, everybody comes home and turns on their heater and turns on their ovens, then the power utilities all of a sudden need to provide a lot of power. Well, we could. Theoretically, we could, and have done practically, we could turn off the heat cables for 15 minutes or 20 minutes at a time and do a rolling turn off and turn on throughout the community. And it doesn't hurt the melting of the snow at all, but it provides a lot of power back to the utility. And so they can use that to then provide for the peak. And they don't need to fire up that gas power that is very, very expensive, or they don't have to purchase power on the market, which at that peak time is also very expensive. I know that Tom looked a lot into the economics of that. Tom, if you want to comment on that.
You probably heard about these grid strains and whatnot. So virtual power plants were, I think they've been around for a number of years, but the lady over at the Department of Energy, her name is Jennifer Downing. She wrote the virtual power plant liftoff report. And since it's a science show, we'll get a little geeky. There's four categories that she kind of solidified there in that VPP liftoff report. It's shape, shimmy, shift, and shed. And we like to say we do everything except shimmy. We're not shimmying, but we're going to work on that dance. The shaping and the shifting and the shedding are all important things for the grid. We'll probably get into grid stability in a minute, but the VPP is when you can, it's a virtual power plant, right? So we're not a natural gas plant or a coal plant or a nuclear plant or a solar farm or a wind farm. Instead, we're actually much more similar to the picture of the Tesla Powerwall or any of the other wonderful batteries that do a similar thing, right? They sit in your home or maybe business. One of the things that the power companies get excited about, and one of the reasons the power companies actually write a check to help you get the Tesla Powerwall or other similar technology installed, is that during real peak demand, like I was talking about, the power company can send a signal to that Powerwall and say, please dump your power back onto the grid, either sort of at full force or maybe at half force, depending on how they decide to use that resource. And that has been very, very, very helpful for these grids. And there's some pretty significant things that shave peak. And so the interesting thing for all the listeners to go Google is the power demand curve on the grid over a typical day. And what you'll see is there's a huge spike usually around 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. That's like literally double base demand. And if you can just address this little peak, then we can kind of avoid the situation that U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright has been talking about for the last few months of like these imminent blackouts. And so that's kind of where virtual power plants come in. The Nest thermostat is a really good example where they basically turn the temperature in your house up during summer just by a degree or two or three for a little bit of time. That, Lakai and I like to say, can sometimes make people uncomfortable. Like maybe you're getting a little hot, maybe you're not, but maybe you are. Especially in Texas, where there's a pretty significant VPP down there called Renew Home. And they're doing just that, right? Controlling thermostats for a little bit. That gets them a little bit of power for a short period of time because you can't do this for very long. We like to say we can help the utilities with a significant amount of power for a significant amount of time, more like the Tesla Powerwall, actually. We like to say about 2 PW switches equals a Tesla Powerwall, roughly, in capacity on the grid. And so that's neat too. And one of the things that we've realized being on, hundreds and hundreds of roofs over time ourselves is that you can kind of do the melting whenever you want. Like when the new fluffy powder is coming down out of the sky, you don't need to melt down there. And it's kind of like those people who told you, hey, never turn your hot tub down because it takes way more energy to bring it back up to temperature. No, that's not correct. And so, a little bit of thermodynamic knowledge goes a long way in this kind of industry, which had been sleepy for a long time.
Wow, Kai, I have never actually thought about my own roof as being part of the power grid. And that's kind of fascinating to think that when I come home at night and I flip on the switch to turn my heat tape on or my oven, or now I'm doing laundry or dishwashing, the power grid on my roof, I mean, I've never really thought about how it contributes. How does powder watts, what makes my home smarter?
Well, the smart part is that there's two things, right? Number one, we only need to turn on the heat cables when there's really stuff to melt on the roof. Your thermostat, and I have a thermostat too, the story I was told earlier was with a thermostat. That doesn't help you there because the thermostat only looks at temperature, right? And if it's just, I don't know, below 50 or 40 degrees, it turns them on. Even if there's zero, like right now, there's no snow on my roof at all. Or if it's super cold, then nothing is melting on my roof anyway. I don't need the heat cables either. It's minus 20 Fahrenheit and I don't need to have them on. And so we are smart in the way that we're really watching exactly what the heat cable is supposed to do. And so we can actually turn the heat cable on and off when they're needed. And then on top of that, as Tom mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter whether if you really have snow on your roof, and it doesn't matter whether you turn them off for like 15, 20, 30 minutes. And if you do that on many homes in the community, that saves a substantial amount of energy. And so they're not only smart on your home, they're actually smart for the community and for the power grid as well.
Okay, so just to be clear on this, Kai, powder watts is figuring out when that curve of energy usage is the highest, and then it will figure out how to turn off during that time, even if it's for 20 or 30 minutes.
Well, the power company would they make the determination whether they have a power peak and they need some power supplied right now, and then we can offer what we can to turn off the heat cables during that time or have a rolling heat cable turn off through the community. So yes, that's how that would work. So.
Lynn, I'll add, the Department of Energy's told us, I guess for about a year now, that we're part of their Title 17 LPO program. And they've told us for about a year now that the first shortfalls that will actually, where the grid's falling below required reserve margins would be in the winter. And, or I should say, that's what they've been saying for about a year. And now everything has changed to, whoops, we're already having those. So there's actually a number, if you Google emergency action on the grid, you'll see there's been probably about 10 Department of Energy emergency authorizations on the grid for power plants to operate beyond their limits already. It's already happening. And so we have a little report that's sort of summarizing that. And, Energy Secretary Chris Wright likes to say, hey, look, the emergency is now. Like we're running short. And so what we learned was that it was supposed to be actually next winter, but it's actually now going to be this winter. There's a number of different sections on the US grids where required reserve margins are forecasted or already falling below their acceptable levels. And so this is a little bit of a change for the grid, because like I was saying, or like, I think like you were saying, Lynn, most people were thinking about the grid being strained during the summer. But we've done a pretty good job of building out a solar fleet, and that helps. But solar doesn't make as much energy in the winter, just throughout the whole nation. And so, your production of that is greatly reduced as well.
Okay, so I would think when there's already some solar heating, some help from the sun, that would be the best time to melt the ice build up instead of, I mean, I've seen my heat tapes up there trying to work, when there's already a bunch of ice on the roof. And I think, wow, it's got a long way to go before it's going to be melting anything. What is the time of the day when it's most effective?
Well, that's a good point. If it is 50 degrees and sunny, you're getting quite a bit of help from Mother Nature there in your melting. So imagine how much energy you have to dump into the ice to melt it. If the ambient temperature is warm, that certainly helps for sure. Especially, and of course, the other thing that helps is if you get what's called a snow cave on your roof, where over time they kind of it might look like your roof is completely covered in snow on the edge. But if you dig, get a little shovel, get a ladder, get up there. I don't recommend it, but if you're harnessed in, you can go conduct your own experiment. And if you get up there, you can see, hey, look, all the melting's actually already been done inside of the snow cave. And that's one of the things that the computer vision really gives you. But, in thinking about when's the best time, what powder watts does is it makes sure that there's never a significant accumulation, more than call it like a millimeter or maybe two, of ice on the roof. So anytime that ice is detected, the system kicks on. So one of the nice things is you're not faced with like this catch-up situation. Now, the same is not true with like fluffy powder, right? Fluffy powder is pretty easy to melt. And it's not a danger for water leaking into your house, which of course is one of the results of a bad ice dam, right? If you have some fluffy powder on the edge, then you can Wait till the storm is done, as you talked about, like in the hot tub analogy. Many, many systems for heat cable, you don't have to just let them run the entire storm. You can wait until the storm is done, click them on, do all your melting and call it 4, 6 hours, maybe 8 is kind of what we see. And then, you know, if you can actually visually verify that you've made this great melt channel, then you can go back into standby mode. The challenge, of course, is how do you know what's going on your roof? And how do you actually monitor it? How do you automatically switch it? And what do you do if you're traveling? All these sort of things. That's where the fully automatic nature is just where Kai and I settled. Like, it's got to be an end-to-end seamless, fully automatic thing where nobody has to touch anything. But that being said, if you want to hop into the app and take a look at your current roof conditions, you can.
And one thing we haven't mentioned yet is we have over the last couple of years over hundreds and hundreds of heat cable circuits. We have shown that with computer vision and intelligent smart control, you can cut down on your heat cable use by about 80 to 90%. That is very substantial. So my $320 a month bill with the thermostat controlled heat cables is now right around maybe 105, 110.
Well, we're talking about automation with the wonderful folks from Powder Watts. We have Tom Clardy and Kai Kuk. The obvious question when you talk about automation, and it seems like on Cool Science Radio, we are constantly talking about AI. What role does AI play in the Powder Watts system?
Well, so I actually did my dissertation work using AI back in the 90s when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, and so I've seen it back then, and it's so amazing to see what's happening now and all the powerful stuff. And we're using AI for a number of things. The primary one is we're actually have a trained AI model now that can see whether a heat cable needs to be on or not, and we trained it with data from three human observers, Tom and I and Dave. We looked at thousands and thousands of images and labeled them, and then the AI model was trained to follow whether we should turn them on or off. And that's all AI and computer vision. And so that's really where it's in. And then, of course, you could also then take into account ambient conditions and weather forecasts and all this other stuff. So that's where AI comes in to make this really smart.
Wow. Before we let you go, we've just got to ask some real particulars, like how long does it take to install? What's an idea of what we're getting into if we want to sign up for Powder Watts?
Awesome. Well,
Tom.
the install is really simple and quick. It's just installing the smart switches in line with the supply wires. So picture your supply wires coming out of your circuit breaker that eventually make their way up to the heat cable. So we put a smart switch for each one there, and then that's paired with a smart monitor that's up on the roof, that camera monitor up on the roof. They're paired together. The installer does that just by scanning QR codes on the back of the devices. And then all
And
that.
the camera's wireless, so we're not installing any cables or anything on the roof. There's no need for that.
That's been a big help, and people love that, right? Nobody wants to string another thing under the roof. And honestly, what we learned, actually, just getting into the geeky part a little bit, is that you know, the National Electric Code doesn't re let you run. So, for instance, like a camera type wire in the same conduit as those high amp AC wires, right? So it's nice to have everything wireless and everything scanned. And then on the price, I have really good news for folks, and that is the fact that the power company sees the value in this after co-witnessing and co-logging the data for years. For Powder Watts, they said, wow, this is, you know, just an amazing return to the grid for the ratepayers. So we'll go ahead and subsidize that. So the power subsidies bring the costs for people down to the point where both commercial, by the way. So we're doing lots of hotels, lots of, if you're an HOA president, property managers. So any of the property manager firms that you see going around, this gives them not only a huge savings for their clients, one of the few things they can do that say to their client, look, I'll save you a couple thousand a year. Plus, it saves them from having to drive around to every single home and try to remember to turn on all the heat cables in late October, early November, and turn them all off in the spring and find all those circuit breaker spots. And so the install is like circling back around, pretty easy. Smart switch, rooftop monitor, little Powder Watts hub that plugs into your internet, communicates through. Even for big HOAs, you know, we'll actually build out a wireless network for you if you don't already have one, which has been kind of like candy for the HOAs, because there's a lot of things they would love to run on there, like for instance, security cameras and sprinkler systems and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And Rocky Mountain Power will rebate the systems down to about a 1 year payback on about on average, which, by the way, is pretty difficult to find anything else that you can do to your home or business that has a 1 year payback.
We've been joined today by co-founders of Powder Watts, Tom Clardy and Kai Kuk. Thank you both so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio.
Yeah, thanks
Thanks
for having
for
us.
having us.
Thanks for tuning to Cool Science Radio. You can find this episode, as well as past episodes, on the KPCW website or on the new KPCW app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts at KPCW Cool Science Radio. And if you liked today's episode, rate us, subscribe to the show, and share it with your friends.
If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future episode, email us at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.